Om Gyanatimiran Dhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Is the company you work for called Utopia? Where'd you get that t-shirt from? You're the culprit. Utopia perfectly possible. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that the prime symptom of a conditioned soul is that they always talk nonsense. So they're not simply content with talking it, but they make slogans and put it on t-shirts also. So congratulations, you're propagating nonsense. A passive propagator of nonsense. Utopia, who knows the etymological derivation of this term? Actually, I don't know the etymological, but the source of it. Where did this term come? What does it mean, first of all? Utopia. An ideal state. Okay, where did this word come from? No idea. There was a book written by, I think it was H.G. Wells, for all it's worth, called Utopia, in which it described heaven on earth. Shangri-La, that's another term used to mean a place where everything is wonderful and everyone lives together very happily and they're all good. Now, of course, that's there, and that is the spiritual world, but the idea that we shall live happily ever after, as all good fairy tales end, is nonsense, because this world is certified as anityam asukham lokam, as a place in which everything is temporary. So even if you could imagine to live very nicely, you have to die, which is not very nice. And it's asukham. There's no actual happiness here. Not only is it asukham, but it's dukhalayam. It's positively miserable. The same thing. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. Twice in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna points out that this material world is miserable. And if you're such a damn fool that you think you'll be happy here anyway, well, you can't be, because you have to get kicked out of the situation you're trying to be happy in. And dying and getting born again isn't any fun. Anyone think it's a lot of fun to die? All right, sometimes people, they want to be argumentative and say yes. Then we offer them to jump off the top of a building or something. You have to be careful saying that. Sometimes people are so crazy, they might do something like that. What's that? Tick, tick, tick. What's that? Is it everything has some kind? This is the kind of thing we used to see when we were kids. Futuristic TV programs showing futuristic things where everything's always beeping and blurping and flashing, and it's, now we've got it and it's miserable, isn't it? It's another utopia. Science will make everything wonderful. Technological progress. Yeah, when I was a kid at school, we used to hear, yeah, stick it in there, how in the future machines will do everything and people won't have to work. Ha, ha, ha. There's more machines and you have to work harder than ever. Theoretically, it would be possible, I guess, that... Well, actually, that was already there. Previously, people didn't work so hard. Now we've become more advanced and progressive, so people work hard. They have to work more hard, and it's called progress. So utopia, this... What is it written? Utopia, perfectly possible. The idea that we shall be happy in this material world. Well, it's cheating. The idea that we'll be happy in this material world is simply cheating. But everyone's happy to be cheated. Even we see so many people come to Krishna consciousness, but they like to take it up, not too much. That our main business in life is to work like an ass and work for some demon meat eater somewhere. We don't even know who he is or where he is, or some multinational corporation. I got a job in a multinational corporation. I'm a success. And work hard, earn money, and chant Hare Krishna sometimes. And you can be good also. The main business in life is to be an ass, a multinational ass. And sometimes you chant Hare Krishna. All right, well, what's the goal of life? What is the goal of life? Anyone? Anyone? Any ideas? What should we do having attained this human birth? Any verses? Say a shloka. You're supposed to be a big pandit. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir ad hokshaje ahaituki aprati hata yayama supersedati. The supreme occupation for every human is to render devotional service to the transcendent Lord. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Yeah. Well, to be uninterrupted, you have to stop working for the multinational corporation, I guess. Because that's a big interruption, isn't it? That's a very good idea. You don't have to. You're not bound to spend all your life doing something that you don't want to do. How many of you would like to work for a multinational corporation? If we ask people on the street who don't work for a multinational corporation, most of them say, oh yeah. And then if we tell them, well, okay, I'll arrange for you to work for a multinational corporation, but you won't get any pay, then how many people would like to work? No one. The people who are very enthusiastic 5 seconds ago lost all their enthusiasm immediately. So, what are you working for? They talk about job satisfaction. It's a bunch of BS, as they say. People are working for money. That's what it's all about. The goal of life is to make money so that you can, when you get a physical breakdown or a heart attack or a nervous breakdown, or you can go to a prestigious hospital that's in line with your prestigious job. And the company might even give you insurance. So when I see young men like yourself spoiling your life with an idea of Krishna consciousness, but basically spoiling your life by not doing that which is in your actual best interest, and actually spending all your time, or most of your time, working for utopia, for pursuing a dream which can never be fulfilled, then I'm reminded of Narada Muni. And the Haryashvas and Shavalashvas. Who's read Bhagavatam up to the 6th canto? Anyone? Not very likely. You don't have that much time, probably. Did you read that far? Didn't make it up to the 6th canto yet? In the 6th canto of Bhagavatam is described how Daksha, who's one of the Prajapatis, means one of the Prajapati is translated in English as progenitor, and sometimes butterfly. That's a different kind of Prajapati. So at the beginning of each Brahma's day, Brahma from his mind produces sons, And some of them are Prajapatis. One of them is Narad Muni. He's one of the Manasaputras. And they produce children. That's what they do. Many of them. They're supposed to fill up the universe with progeny, because that's what the universe is for people who have forgotten Krishna, to be very busy forgetting Krishna, birth after birth. So they have to start somewhere. So they start off getting born, and at the beginning of a day of Brahma, and Daksha is one of the chief Prajapatis. That means he is a pious person in his previous existence. He's a pious person who's given the job of filling the universe by sexual intercourse. That's how most children are born. A few at the beginning are born from Brahma's mind, and Brahma himself is born from the lotus which grows from the navel of Garbhodaksha Vishnu. But most children are born by sexual intercourse, and Daksha, his name means expert, and he's very expert at sexual intercourse and producing children. So he had 10,000 sons by one of his wives, whose name I forget just now. He had many wives, and they were called the Haryashvas. And he sent them to Narayana Saras, which is, or was, I don't know if there's any such lake now, but there was a lake at the confluence of the Sindhu River and the Sindhu, the ocean. That ocean is called Ratnaka, yeah, that western ocean. So he sent them there to do tapasya, so that they could become purified and capable of themselves producing more children. Because Daksha was a pious person. He wanted that his sons bring forth good children, not just any children, but good children, means pious people. So they went there and they were performing tapasya, and by touching the waters of the lake and performing regularly bathing in the holy waters, their consciousness became very pious. They were already pious at birth. Narada Muni happened to wander that way and saw all these young men engaged in tapasya for the sake of generating population. So he spoke to them in such a way that they could understand that it's, you're already doing all this hard work, and by such tapasya, if you just change your goal, instead of having the goal to be married and produce many children, you can go back to Godhead. You can worship Krishna and go to Krishna. So they did. And Daksha was not pleased, because I was given a job to do and you diverted that. Now, if he had been a devotee of Krishna, he would have been pleased. But he wasn't. So he wasn't pleased. He was a pious person, a religious person, but he wasn't at least a pure devotee of Krishna. So anyway, he produced another set of sons, the Shavalashvas they were called, this set, 1,000 of them. And he also sent them to Narayana Saras for purification. And Narad Muni went there and said, you should follow your elder brothers. I said, okay. And they also went back to Godhead. And this time Daksha became upset. Actually, he was feeling very disturbed in mind. And Narada Muni thought, oh, now he's disturbed. Maybe it's a good time to preach to him too. But Daksha didn't take it that way. And he, when Narad Muni came to him, Daksha was very upset at Narada. And He said, what are you doing? You're just spoiling all these boys. You see that you think you're... You think you're a great sadhu. Well, I'm a better sadhu than you. You're just going around. You're just some kind of so-called spiritual terrorist ruining people's lives. And I'm very religious. I want to fill up the population, fill up the universe with pious people. So Daksha cursed Narada. That I curse you that you can never stay in any place for 3 days. No more than 3 days. So for one who is griha murhadhi, or one whose intelligence is spoiled by the foolishness of attachment to family life, which is also called, this is a term from Bhagavatam. Another term is grihavrata, or one who is already decided that I'm going to live in family life. Then for such a person, that's a terrible curse, because how can you be happy in home life if you're traveling every 3 days? Where's the home? You're always on the move. But for a traveling preacher like Narad Muni, that was great. Okay, good. Very good. I accept it. Narada is quite competent to counteract any curse. But he accepted it. So like that, followers of Narad Muni up to the present day, they go around and whenever they see young people, pious people, or even impious people, but especially pious people who are engaged in activities which are not going to lead them to Krishna, they attempt to divert them. At least they tell them that, here you are, you see, now you have the opportunity, you don't have to enter that. There's another term, andhakupa, which means a blind well. That means family life is like a blind well. If you fall into it, the blind well is, the example is given of a well in a field which has been abandoned, and it gets the opening to it gets covered with long grass. So if someone, there's no water in there, and if so, just maybe some brackish water at the bottom. So someone may be walking in the field and they don't see that there's a well and they fall into it. And it's just in there. Formerly it might have been a populated area, now it's not. So he's stuck at the bottom of a well and there's no one to help him get out. And there might be some gnats and mosquitoes and some snakes to bite him there. It's not a very nice situation at all. So family life is like that. You fall in and you can't get out. So that's what your utopia is like. Utopia has come to mean a situation which is an ideal situation that is dreamed about but is not possible to attain. Simply imagination. Even the materialists understand that the so-called ideal is not possible. It just won't happen. Whether democracy, communism, socialism, Congress, BJP, whatever, it's going to be a mess. Whatever. So yeah, the followers of Narad Muni, they see that, well, if you did enter that way already, you're already married, okay, take it up, do it responsibly, and whatever little time you have, chant Hare Krishna. But if you don't have to enter that way, then why not spread Krishna, take up Krishna consciousness seriously? As Srila Prabhupada, the first time he was in 1922, that time he was 26 years old, and he first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He didn't want to meet him, because he thought, well, what's the use of all these sadhus? They're all useless people, just a bunch of beggars. But his friend, Narendranath Malik, dragged him. You have to see this sadhu, he's good. seen so many sadhus. But anyway, he went, and because he was trained in Vaishnav culture by his parents, Abhay, as his name was at that time, bowed down before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He never even heard his name until just a few days ago. And before he could even get up, before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati asked, "Who is this?" He's seen these two men. He said, "You are both educated young men. Why don't you dedicate your lives for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world?" So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was obviously in the sampradaya of Narada Muni. That was apparent not only from this. But the point is, if you are young and you haven't got that big attachment of family life, then why not take up Krishna consciousness very seriously? That means that you don't have to work for some company or for some family, or you have this obligation and that obligation and this and that and the other. And people think, well, I have to fulfill these obligations. But when will the obligations be finished? The answer is never. The material obligations will never be finished. Unless you lose all your money. And even then you might have it. You may have debts to repay and you have to try and get some. But we see that people who are very much respected, if they lose all their money, then no one cares for them at all. But in the meantime, you have the illusion of thinking, I'm looking after my family. I have so many servants and animals and so many, I have to look after all this and that and the other. And you might think, well, all right, I'm married, I've got my children, and when they grow up, I'll renounce everything and take fully to Krishna consciousness. But then Maya comes in the form of grandchildren. And you're trapped again, because who will look after the young parents? They don't know, and they're so sweet, and just a little time more, and then you're trapped again. So better not enter that loop. You can come out. You can at least consider it. Put it in your mind that it's possible. Oh, my parents won't like it. Guaranteed they won't like it. They won't like it. But how many lifetimes are you going to go on like this? Next lifetime you're going to have parents also, right? And they're going to have the same demands and the same expectations. It just goes on and on. It's already been going on and on and on. How many millions of lifetimes have we been fulfilling obligations? They're never ended. But our real obligation is to Krishna. Labdhva sudura labham idang bahu sambhavante manusham arthadam anityam apiha dhira. Turnam yateta napatedanu mrityayava nisrayasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasyat. This is spoken by Lord Krishna. You'll find this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that I vow to keep on preaching the import of this verse up to my last breath. Lord Krishna says, having obtained this human form of life, which is very rare. It's rare, but now we got it, right? Now we're here. Now we're at this particular point in time, we're not in the body of a cat or a dog or a buffalo or a snake or an ant or a tree or a demigod. We're in the human form of life, which is especially conducive for self-realization. And we happen to have this body right now. This human life is very valuable because we can attain the ultimate perfection. But it doesn't last long. Therefore, someone who is very sober-minded, whose intelligence is not carried away by utopian ambitions, how I shall be happy in this material world, how I shall fulfill my obligations, this, that, and the other. Such a person, he acts in such a way that before his next death, which is inevitable, he acts in such a way that he doesn't get born again. And if one thinks, well, what about enjoying life? I should enjoy myself. I got this human form of life. I can go to parties. See, what's the difference between humans and animals? Humans can go to parties. The dogs don't have parties. They have parties on the street. They're running around. The humans can take alcohol and get intoxicated. Well, is that a great advantage? The purpose of human life is to act in, first of all, to be intelligent enough to see how miserable this material world is. If one doesn't come to that platform of realization, then you're just actually an animal. And all this so-called progress, people say it's progress, but it's actually just on the animalistic platform, because the ultimate aim is sophisticated eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and that's all. So one should consider that we've had the opportunity for sense gratification life after life after life, and now we should act in such a way to get free from that. That's real intelligence. Otherwise, our intelligence is just being diverted into software programming or building bridges and all this kind of thing. Engineering and whatever. So think about it. You don't have to put all your energy and attention into utopian goals. Everything's going to be finished. Whatever it is, the Utopia company is going to be finished, and IBM is going to be finished, and Hewlett Packard is going to be finished, and they're all going to be finished, and Bangalore is going to be finished, and India is going to be finished, and the whole universe is going to burn up at some point in time. They're worried about terrorists. Terrorists, what do? They throw bombs, and then they set up bombs, and the whole building blows up. Well, maybe we should say that the duo of Mahavishnu and Shiva, they're the biggest terrorists, because between them they burn up the whole universe. How about that? Makes Bin Laden look like a little child. Burn up the whole universe. All going to be burned up. And then we reside in the bodies of Vishnu and again come out again. And again pursue the utopian dream. We shall be happy in this world. And it goes on and on. And it's a mass brainwashing, mutual brainwashing. Everyone thinks we'll all be happy. And everyone around us thinks we'll all be happy. And this is the way to get happy. Work hard, earn money, and everyone says you have to be a success, wear fancy clothes, you can buy a branded t-shirt, or Peter England or something for like, how much does it cost? 1,000 rupees or something for a shirt? You can buy one, you can't tell the difference for like 50 rupees, but because it has that little stamp on it, which is some, what's that called? Branded company? Or there's some name for it. Yeah, there's... I can't remember. There's some word they use in the West. Designer or something. Something like that. I don't know. So people think, yeah, that's great. You know, I got my Nike shoes and my Levi jeans and my petering. What is this petering? I never heard of it in England. I never heard of it in England. It's some Indian made it. Yeah. They made it up to sound English. I don't know. Maybe it was some company. They say it started in 1750 or something. Maybe someone in India started a company. Who knows? Who cares? So it's just a big hoax that everyone is participating in, that we shall be happy in this material world. But it just doesn't happen. It never happened, and it never will happen, because the very nature of this world, certified by Lord Krishna, is Dukhalayama Shashvatam. It's a miserable place. And even if we think, I'm happy, I will be happy. But whatever situation we work hard for to make happiness, it will all be finished. So, better find out the real place of happiness, which is beyond this material world, which is the world of Krishna. But to go there, one has to be serious about going there. That means we have to be serious about sadhana, spiritual practices. If our main sadhana is working for some company, then sadhana, of course, we generally think of sadhana as some spiritual practice, but sadhana, it means practice. So practically, everyone is doing some sadhana. Either working in your company is the sadhana for becoming attached to and remaining in this material world. Because whatever we do, it creates some impression in our mind. And whatever we do, we tend to become attached to that. So that's also one kind of sadhana by which we become entangled in this material world. Now, bhakti is very strong. So even if we're not engaged full time in Krishna consciousness, we can also become Krishna conscious. But it's a lot more difficult when there's that example is they're rowing up against upstream. That we're trying to go one way, but the current is going the other way. So it becomes a lot more difficult to remember Krishna in situations which are positively arranged not to remember Krishna. The whole atmosphere is quite different. And even if you say that in the work situation, I want to remember Krishna, it won't be appreciated at all. They don't want you to do that. It's considered a great disturbance. And it's a crime. We're paying you here, and we're praying you to work for us, not to think of Krishna. So it's like a Prahlad Hiranyakashipu situation. Of course, Prahlad was very strong-minded, and he remembered Krishna despite all difficulties. But for most people, it's not so easy. I mean, frankly speaking, even when we are full-time practicing Krishna consciousness, due to the waves of thoughts which have come from many, many lifetimes, even then to remember Krishna is not so easy. What do you think, Madhu Gauranga? You've seen both sides. You've been full-time also. Yeah. So were you always thinking of Krishna when you were full-time in devotional service? Not always, yeah. But it certainly is a lot easier when your whole life is focused on that and when your whole service is focused on that. And just like Srila Prabhupada said to Abhay Charan Dey, who later became His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, why don't you preach Krishna consciousness all over the world? Apart from ourselves, that we can take up Krishna consciousness for our own benefit, there's a whole world which is going to hell for lack of knowledge of Krishna. People are suffering. And look at Bangalore, everyone looks so miserable. It's very like the West. What do you think? When you go in the West, I remember years ago, I was in Perth in Australia, and I was going somewhere about 5 o'clock in the evening, the time everyone comes out of their office, and I remember going past a bus stop, and just all these people standing at the bus stop, and they all look totally devastated, and then just no expression. I mean, they weren't making deliberately expressions of pain or any such thing, but there was just a whole aura about them of just being like drained. You know that feeling, being drained? You know that, right? So I just saw here a couple of days ago in Bangalore, just going on a bus going past, I saw all the people. Same thing. It's so difficult in this city even to get anyone to smile. Say Hare Krishna to people and smile. You know, it's like they're out of practice or something. It's like they didn't do it since they're about 5 years old. People are so miserable. And so a Vaishnava is supposed to be paradukha dukhi. See how people are suffering. We have to do something to try to help them. And that something, we say something, it's not something, it's one thing. And that is to give knowledge of Krishna and give people this life of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we can't expect everyone to be full-time, as we say, but at least some should come forward and take this seriously, study knowledge of Krishna instead of studying manuals and so many books, software, and then the latest, and you have to keep up with it. Study the Shastra. And become expert in knowledge of Krishna consciousness and imparting that to others. At least some should do that. The more the better. There are 10,000 Haryashvas, and after that, 1,000 Shavalashvas. So that's what I see. When I see all you nice young men chanting Hare Krishna, well, why not go the next step further? You can do it. You don't have to be entangled in life's problems and anxieties. You don't have to be. Your parents won't agree. Everyone will say you're crazy. Even our so-called devotees will say you're crazy because they're also attached to this material. They're trying to cultivate both things at once, which isn't possible, actually. So even most of our devotees will say, no, no, better you stay at home. Why? Why? What's the advantage? If the goal of life is to remember Krishna, then we should do whatever is most favorable for that, right? Oh, people won't like it, they'll get upset, yeah, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. It's been since Daksha and even before that. There have been so many who just... Okay, it's all right to be Krishna conscious, but not too much. That's not what Krishna consciousness is. Krishna consciousness is ananya cheta satatam ananyas chintayanto mam satatam kirtayanto mam. We see these terms again and again. Only thinking of Krishna without any diversion. Always chanting Krishna's glories. This is the actual standard of Krishna consciousness. The standard is not to work hard and squeeze in a little Krishna consciousness here and there, wherever you can. And then go for a yatra once or twice a year, and then come back and then get on with the real business of life, which is working hard for some demon somewhere you don't even know, to make more money for him. That's not the goal of life. The goal of life is to always think of Krishna and never forget him. And the sooner we get on the track of doing that, the better it'll be for us and the better it'll be for everyone else. And at least, if you're not going to get shaved up today, then, yeah, you're laughing, but we're ready. If you want, that's what it used to be. That's how so many divide. In the West, that is what it used to be. People come in, we preach to them, and, you know, couple of give them some prasadam, and 2 hours later, shaved up. That's it. Holding onto your hair. Mr. Utopia is holding onto his hair. sign of material attachment. So, yeah, if you're not going to shave up today, then at least take up what you're doing seriously. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushampara. Bhakti, it's not a half-hearted hobby. But bhakti, when we speak of bhakti, that means tivrena. It should be done in a manner that intense. So, now you've all come here in this residence together, so when you do escape from your multinational incarceration, at least as much time as you can, and take up this Krishna conscious practices very seriously. There's so much. We have to read Prabhupada's books. No one read up to, I was asking sixth canto, who read any of the Bhagavatam? Any of you? I see devotees there, like they're initiated 10 years and they didn't read the Bhagavatam. But that's an essential practice. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of the... what are the five principal activities of bhakti that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said? Who can say? Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavata Shravan, hearing Bhagavatam. Yeah, that's Mathura Vas, Shradhai Shimurtir Shevan. So the five are Sadhu Sangha, associating with devotees, Nama Kirtan, chanting the holy names of Krishna, Bhagavata Shravan, hearing Bhagavata, Mathura Vas, residence in Mathura, and faithfully serving the deity. So, Bhagavat Shravan. Actually, if we take it down to two, then the two important ones are Shravana Kirtan. So Shravan particularly means Shravan of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you should all study this. Otherwise, how can we know what bhakti is? How can we know who Krishna is? Unless we study Srimad Bhagavatam. So do that, and we also have to distribute that. There's so much work to do. What's the population of Bangalore now? It's 50 lakhs, 80 lakhs, More than 80 lakhs, including all the suburbs and everything. And it's growing and growing, and actually it extends right up to the Tamil Nadu border. And really, if you drive up to Hosur, and then it practically, Hosur, although they won't admit it, it's become an extension of Bangalore now. So that's also, it's just growing and growing and growing. So there are so many people who don't know about Krishna. Or they may have some vague idea they picked up from some TV program or something. And but knowledge of Krishna is clearly enunciated in Srila Prabhupada's books. So we need to study them, we need to distribute them, we need to enter into the consciousness of Narada Muni, which is described there. So it's a very serious business. I mean, we really need to... One thing that's required to practice Krishna consciousness is sufficient time. So most people in the modern age don't really get much time. But then whatever time we have, we should utilize that for Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Comment?
Maharaj, Mahaprabhu said five types of bhakti. One is Mathuravas. In one of your lectures, I heard a brahmachari, the best thing is to stay in Mayapur. Means what is the means relation of means
what is the relation? What is the relation? You mean between Mathura and Mayapur? Well, Narottam Das Thakur says, and there are many Vaishnav acharyas who say similar things. Shri Gaura Mandala Bhumi Jeba Jane Chintamani Tara Hoy Braja Bhume Bash. One who understands the land of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes to be fully spiritual and transcendental. In other words, non-different from Mathura. They live in Mathura. They live in Braja. Anyway, living in either of those places physically is not possible for everyone, but Shravan Kirtan, that is most important, that we should do. And by doing that, we can all, if we're actually absorbed in that, then we can always live in Mathura. Whereas some people who physically, their bodies are in Mathura, but their mind is in some materialistic utopia. They're cultivating lust, greed, anger, envy, all these things. Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya. You'll see if we go to Mathura, we'll find so many people are greedy for money. So they and others might consider them such people to be residents of Mathura, but they're not residents like Nanda Maharaj, who is only thinking of Krishna. They're materialistic, if you just be frank about it. Yeah, anything else?
Even in Krishna consciousness, there have been many devotees who have joined and have not found what they wanted. Probably, you know, I'm not sure what exactly it is, but there are a lot of devotees who say that no, you can stay out and practice, and it's not necessary.
That's what I say. You confirmed it. Then many will say, you can stay outside and practice. You can do. But you can't think that it'll be the same. Many devotees joined and didn't find what they wanted. Well, what did they want? If they wanted to fully dedicate their lives to Krishna, they could do. If they don't, then they'll find that joining is not what they want. So what do you want? First understand, what do we want? Rupa Goswami warns us, don't go to Keshi Ghat, because Krishna is there. And if you see Krishna, then all your attachment to home, family, friends, that will be spoiled. So if he warns us, if we are actually looking for Krishna, then our material attachments, they'll become just like Narottam Das says, that ar kobe nitai chande karuna hoibe shongshara bashana mor kobe tucha hobe. If we actually get the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, then our material desires will become insignificant. So this is some kind of very envious propaganda that some of our so-called devotees make, that don't join, don't give your life to Krishna. You might not be successful. Better just work and be normal, so-called normal. And it's just enviousness. If young people want to give their life to Krishna and serve Krishna, why discourage them? Because you're spoiled, then everyone else should be like that. So they think they're acting in the best interest. It's just like Daksha. He didn't actually want the best interest of his children. He thought he was the well-wisher of his children, but he wasn't, because he didn't recognize what the actual best interest is. Well, even if you do join full-time and you don't go all the way, well, that's also stated by Narada Muni. Tyaktva swadharmam charanambujam hare bhajanna pakvota. Patitato yadi. What's the next line? Tatravakva Vadrama Buddha Musha Kim Kovarta Abtang Bhajato Swadharmataha. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada quotes this twice in his Bhagavad Gita as it is purports. That even if one gives up one's so-called material duty to fully engage in Krishna consciousness, but does not complete the whole course in this life, he didn't lose anything. Because whatever we do in Krishna consciousness is for our eternal benefit. But on the other hand, if you execute all your material duties perfectly, you don't gain anything. It's not in and of itself an achievement to be a good husband, a good wife, a responsible member of this material world. It's not in and of itself an achievement. It's only an achievement in the eyes of people who consider such things important. But it doesn't serve our best interest or that of anyone else. It's just Maya, that's all. Now, it's true, not everyone's ready for that, but some people are. So why not be one of these special ones? Why consign yourself to the second, third, fourth, or tenth class method of practicing? There are so many people who have taken up Krishna consciousness full-time and are going on year after year. Why not see that? And of course, you can also be Krishna conscious at home, but less likely. It's less likely to attain full Krishna consciousness if your consciousness, like I was saying, most of the time it's on other things. Home, wife, children, job, family, all these things. So you do have a better chance. And you have a better chance. After all that Krishna consciousness is done by serving the acharyas, you can better serve them by not serving some multinational corporation or whatever it is. If we're serious to serve them, then why not do it in the fullest way? Full time. If you want to get their mercy fully. Why not help others? That we can do also, even on a part-time basis. But just like these brahmacharis who came with me, they're engaged in full-time distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books, 6 or 7 days a week. They go out twice or full-time means they go out for several hours each day. So you can also do that part-time, but you don't have the same amount of time to do it in, do you? So they're doing that on a full-time basis. So they're able to benefit others in a better way. That's all. It's simple arithmetic. If you have 10 hours spare a week for book distribution, I think most of our congregational devotees don't have that much. But then if you can put in 50 or 60 hours a week, that's a lot better, isn't it? You can do more. So think of benefiting others also. Anyway, think about it. Please think about it, that you don't have to follow this propaganda that you just stay outside and work. You can also take up the full-time life. You can do it. Think about it. Think about it. Yeah, you want to say something?
Maharaj, when we heard lecture or when we are in the association of devotee, and we
very Krishna.
Yes, we.
To work, we don't. Is that
what
you want to say?
You got me exactly, Maharaj.
I heard this question so many times, you only had to say about 5 words, and I could say the rest of the question for you. When we're in the association of devotees, we feel Krishna conscious, but then when we go to work, then we don't. So what should we do? Don't go to work. That's what I was. That's what I was saying. That was the whole lecture. That was it. You don't have to spend your whole life doing something you don't want to do, which is not beneficial for you. You can be a full-time devotee. That's it. It's not a joke. It's a fact. It's a simple solution to that problem. In the meantime, you can do some patchwork things like, what are you working as? Software engineer. Someone comes up, I got a job in a software company. What are you doing? Cleaning the toilet. So, actually, if you clean the toilets, you're in a better position because you can chant Hare Krishna while you're doing it. But if you're writing software or unscrabbling other people's messes, you do that, right? That's your job? No? Troubleshooting? Is there people... they don't write their program properly, and then that's right, you're unscrabbling other people's messes, right? Then you can't chant Hare Krishna. You have to think about what you're doing. And actually, if you're doing your job, you should do it responsibly. We're not saying don't do it properly. If you're going to do it properly. You're taking money from the people, you entered into a contract, you should do it. But there's no doubt that it is difficult to remember Krishna in such a circumstance. So there are the things you can do. You can put a picture of Krishna on your desk. I don't personally keep pictures of Krishna as my wallpaper on my computer because I don't think it's very proper to have the mouse icon moving across it. I put shlokas. So you can memorize shlokas when you go to your wallpaper, when you go to your desktop. You can utilize the lunch break if you get more time than required for eating, for chanting one round or whatever. You can give your colleagues prasadam or maybe even books if that's not against company policy. So in this way, have a strong sadhana before you go. So all these things will help. But we should know that it's not the best way of life for being Krishna conscious. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he was very concerned, well, there are several reasons, and this is one of them. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish farm communities where devotees could live together and chant Hare Krishna without any obstacle. That means that when you're working in the field, you can chant Hare Krishna. And of course, not everyone's a farmer. There are various things to do. But in a society of devotees, our material necessities are produced. We all live together and we chant Hare Krishna. So that's another great challenge. Especially for householders. We're not condemning householders, and we know that not everyone's fit for a brahmachari life. Even some people might say, I want to be a brahmachari. We tell them, no. That can also be there, because not everyone's ready for that. But if you can, then do it. That's the best. And in many cases, people can do it, but they just have certain reservations and attachments, and people preach to them, you shouldn't do it, you can't do it. There's really no reason why they can't be, especially if you're, like I say, if you're young, you're unmarried, maybe you have some debts to pay off from your education and this and that, but all right, so do that and then come, you can do it. And in most cases, the parents won't like it, so you have to be ready for that. But after some time, they get used to it, and then they become happy actually, seeing that their son has taken up such a noble way of life. So, anything else?
Sometimes I get a thought that I am running away from my obligations or running away from my duties, or this is not a good way of thought.
Yeah, why are you running away from your obligations and your duties? You shouldn't do that. Your obligation and your duty is to surrender to Krishna. Why are you running away from it? That is your obligation and duty. Why are you running away from it? That's the fault of thinking that this material world is my actual place. That's utopia, utopian mad vision. That's why we have to hear Bhagavatam, become absorbed in Krishna Katha and realize that this is reality. Krishna is real. We have our relationship with Him is real. Our obligation to Him is real. Our duty to Him is real. It's not someone's imagination. This obligation to family, society, country, company, this is all imagination. It's not real. It's created out of someone's imagination. It doesn't last. It's like Srila Prabhupada gave the example of children playing with sandcastles. He must have seen that after he came to America, because in India, I don't think they do that. But on the beach in the Western countries, children, they make like castles. It looks like some kind of house. They make it out of sand. And then the sea, the tide comes in, and one wave just washes it all away. They may spend 1 hour. Even I remember as a kid, they have little buckets like this size they make so you can make. You seen that? Where did you see that? Is it? Yeah. So you can make like turrets for the castles. So you may make so much trouble to build up a sand castle that once just one wave comes in, it's all finished. So like that, we're building various corporations and families and dynasties, and but then time washes it all away. So we don't have any real duty to family, friends, society, country, company, cat, dog, any of these things. Our real duty is to Krishna. It's good that some people did that, they came out. Otherwise, it's just like Sri Ramanujacharya, if you thought, well, you know, I'm a young man, I'm married, I got my wife, and then he left her. He came out. And the world's a much better place, isn't it? You probably don't know. Who's heard of Ramanujacharya? Not everyone, maybe. Is it? You've all heard of him? No, you don't want to say no. So many people in Tamil Nadu nowadays, they never heard of him. Really? Never heard of him. Such is the educational system. He was a young man. He was married. He left his wife and took sannyas. Raghavendra Swami left his wife. You've all heard of him. In Karnataka, they must have heard of Raghavendra Swami. Left his wife. What did she do when he left her? Anyone know? She committed suicide. So, he was wrong? Well, what benefit he did to the world by practicing and preaching Krishna consciousness? She made a wrong decision. Well, that's her bad luck. But if one can do so much good to the world, what's the time? It's 10 o'clock now. Then we should do it.